Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. This program is, in fact, live. It is the first day of September 2016. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and participate in the real-time multimedia madcap zany extravaganza that takes place there every evening while the program you are more than welcome to join in. If you go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and you click on chat room and you do up there, you'll be. Just pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you'll be greeted by Hoghead, Jug of Punch, Steve from Georgistan, and VT Blum, and many others, as the program, unfolds on this Thorn in the Side Thursday evening. Okie dokie. So, when last you heard from, you know, me, I was bailing out on Tuesday evening, knocked off a little bit early to go running, Agnes and I, to go driving over to be with our daughter, who was experiencing what we were thinking and still think is appendicitis, and that meant that I didn't get home. Well, I didn't get home until 7-8 o'clock last night, completely exhausted from having been up all night the night before. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Did I mention that? Yeah, I don't. I'm just Tim from LA is not in the room to remind me. Dang it! But anyway. Yeah, that's that. It's been kind of a harrowing and harried sort of 48, 72 hours, such as the Iraq, you know. Yeah. She still has her appendix. I don't want to talk too much out of school. She would be embarrassed to death if she. But. Yeah, we're still waiting for the greatest healthcare system in the history of the world, on Earth, in the universe, now, today, forever, STAT, to try to decide what it is they think is going on or not think. So, like I said, they turned her loose at 3 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday. We pretty much spent the remainder of the time sitting up with her, and she was, to say the very least, miserable, and is still miserable. And I mentioned that, you know, I'm here. Agnes is there. And so we're still waiting to see what's going on. Because we don't know. And that's what, you know, waiting. I wish I could report something different, but no. Agnes is pretty much beside herself. Our daughter is miserable. Her husband is beside himself. We've almost got enough for bridge. And so I wish I could say that, I don't know. I mean, we're all just kind of at sixes and sevens, sadly. So I may have to go howling back across yet again. Don't know. It's deeply frustrating. And, I mean, that's really as much as I can report. I'm sorry. I wish I could report more. By the way, a little bit of an update. We had a we had an end-of-the-month little miracle. No, it wasn't a miracle. It's just a kind, good-hearted determination. We beat the Swede again. We almost didn't, but we did. We beat the Swede again, and thanks very kindly to the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society for doing that alongside a couple of other people. I'm not sure if I can use their names, but we beat the Swede. So that means that's 8 months running, and we've got another chance to beat the Swede in September, going all the way up to December. So that's there. But it is the first day of September, and the first day of the month brings something entirely different. Namely, and to wit, Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge is on the table. And that means that there's a $200 offer out there as long as there's $200 to match it. If we get $200 worth of contributions this evening, Shirley, who does this every month, will happily double it and get us off to a roaring good start in the month of September. So if you'd like to help out, run over to the Contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com. Fill in the necessary information. You can leave the part about what you do and why you do it. You can leave that blank. We don't care. That was part of the PayPal widget anyway. Don't know why it's there. Leave it alone. And just get to the next screen. If you'd like to become a monthly subscriber, click the box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. We're still trying to find the 400 $10 a month subscribers. And that would be awesome because I'd never have to do this stuff again, which would be awesome. So that's that. Hopefully we will raise the $200 this evening, and that will make for a considerably less stressful beginning of the month. So thank you one and all in advance. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the horn. Oh, by the way, if you prefer to use the United States Postal Service, then the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, 25801. Checks and money orders, and let me know if you're going to do that so I can tell Boss Man Wayne to be on the lookout, and that way he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck, and he won't have to take anything with him except, you know, maybe his handy-dandy pry bar in case he runs across any Klansmen. Yep. So that takes care of most of the housekeeping, and it only took about 9 minutes. Stand by here. The program's not going out, is it? Nope, it's not. Okay, program's going out now. The streamer had stopped streaming. But we're all good now. I'm not going to repeat everything except for people listening live to remind them that this is the first of the month and Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge is on the table. Shirley will happily double the $200 if it comes in this evening. Yes. So, again, head on radionetwork.com, click on Contribute, and everything that goes with that. Good. Let's see. Where to go? What to do? Because there's a bunch here. There's some stuff I've been holding on. And I admit, when these little family crises crop up, and we all have them. Especially when they take place in places with really, really, really bad internet service. It's easy to sort of fall out of the loop pretty quickly. Luckily for me, it's a presidential election year, and all I had to do was sit down at the computer and look. Oh, look, Donald Trump's still an asshole. I don't. Have you had your belly full of Donald Trump? Are you all up to speed on what an asshole Donald Trump is? Because if you're not, you know, we can talk about it. This is, after all, conversation radio. But if you're completely up to speed on what an asshole Donald Trump is and how he made an asshole of himself yesterday, like twice and three times on Tuesday and seven times on Sunday, and then maybe we can, you know, we don't have to go there. I mean, if you want to, we can, but we don't have to. That's entirely up to you. My thoughts are in the Gulf of Mexico right now, or along the Florida coast. Hermine, do we pronounce the E? Is it a silent E at the? I don't know. It's just that the National Weather Service is kind of, I don't know, running out of names. Hank and Henrietta, I guess, were already taken. But there's a hurricane. It has been upgraded to a hurricane, bearing down on the Gulf Coast of Florida from over in what is often referred to as Lower Alabama, all the way down past Tampa Bay. It's going to be a mess. I did catch a little bit of a press conference with Florida Governor and notorious climate change denier Rick Scott, who was talking about storm surges of up to 8 feet. I'm guessing our buddy Jay Cruzan will be pretty tied up for the next couple of days, being as how he works to keep the power grid working down that away. I'm sure they'll have him running somewhere hither and thither and yon. And of course, all of the Horn Family Community Congregation's thoughts are with everyone who lives down in the on the Florida Peninsula and along the Gulf Coast, because these things are nasty and frightening and dangerous. And, you know, that was the message earlier today from notorious climate change denier Rick Scott, who said, 3 days of water, 3 days of food, 3 days of batteries, make sure you got all your meds. And by the way, there's no such thing as climate change. Yeah, and okay, no, he didn't say that. He just says that all the time. It's the official state policy of the executive branch of government in the state of Florida. But as the storm hits, I would appreciate it if you, I can think of a number of people that I hope will check in as possible. Check in and let us know you're okay over on my page on Facebook or on the Horn page. Yeah, just let us know that you're all right. Okay. Yeah. A tail of it even looks like it might swing over and get hold of Mobile Bay, which is worrisome for me because I've got family down there. But we will be we'll be thinking about you and hoping everything goes well. What else? Well, the ongoing fracturing of the community continues as a result of the presidential election. Now, I just informed a little bit ago that the guy who I give credit where credit's due. I was informed a little bit ago that the one person who probably did more to introduce more people to Bernie Sanders over the course of the last, what, 5-10 years, you know, Tom Hartman, with whom I have some issues. I mean, he believes in some kind of wacky stuff, like Marbury versus Madison was decided wrongly, and I guess he wants the Supreme Court, the Congress, to, I don't know. It's not worth going into. But I was informed that he is a Clinton apologist. And apparently anybody who doesn't think and doesn't openly declare that Hillary Clinton is the devil is a Clinton apologist. Or anybody who ever brought Jill Stein a cup of insufficiently warm, cruelty-free, probiotic green tea is a Clinton apologist. How do I know this? Because I got a note. I got an unsigned. It's an unsigned note, so I can't tell you who sent it. I've been listening to your radio broadcast for several years now, and this is a thorn. Okay, this is Thorn on the Side Thursday, and this is a thorn. These things are hurtful. I've been listening to your radio broadcast for several years now. I first heard about your show when Mike Malloy recommended it one night on his program. I've both listened to the horn and donated to it in the past, but as of last week, I'm done with it. Your ongoing smear campaign against Dr. Jill Stein. Smear campaign? Really? It's a campaign? I just don't think she's a viable candidate for president. That's a smear campaign. And the insults directed to her and to her supporters, I'm one of them, have gone too far. While I don't have any problem with you not backing her as a presidential candidate, I do have a problem with your name-calling and your unrelenting pettiness and hostile attitude towards her and her supporters. You've demonstrated this on a number of occasions. So I don't like her. Our anonymous writer here says she doesn't, doesn't object to me not supporting her, but then gives me a great deal of reasons why this person does. Unrelenting pettiness and hostile attitude towards it. So I can't, I guess I can't be really, really forthright in why I don't like Jill Stein and how much I don't like her and, you know, offer up my opinion of, never mind. You've demonstrated this on a number of occasions. The broadcast on Wednesday, August 24th was the last straw. This would be, I think, the Wednesday when Mad Mike from South Carolina called in, told me he was going to convert me to Jill Stein, and I said, don't bother. And then he went on for 30 minutes. At about an hour and a half into that day's program, you referred to supporters of Jill Stein as a fucking herd of sparkle-farting unicorn ponies. I don't think that was exactly it, but she puts it in... puts it in quotes. Really, Bob? So as a supporter of Dr. Stein, I'm nothing more than part of a fucking herd and a sparkle-farting unicorn pony? Don't think so. You also referred to Jill Stein as an idiot. Dr. Stein, a graduate of Harvard University and its medical school, is an idiot. Would not be the first time that Harvard graduated one now, would it? Or the Ivy League generally. See, by comparison, George W. Bush, compare favorably, Donald J. Trump. Now, granted, he's Penn, not Harvard, and Harvard looks down its nose at Penn, but... being privileged enough to get into Harvard is not necessarily a mark of genius. It's pathetic. This kind of name-calling is more suited to an elementary school playground full of foul-mouthed fifth graders, and your other slurs against Dr. Stein are reminiscent of some of the odious verbiage one can hear on right-wing hate radio. See how the purity game goes? It's fine as long as I'm criticizing people that everybody else, that other people would criticize too. I mean, if I refer to Donald J. Trump, millionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht, as a giant steaming orange pile of shit, you can almost hear the applause out there. But if I say that I think Jill Stein, based upon her presentation of her ideas and some of the ideas themselves, is a little atne ute aitbre, if you one what I inme, that's unacceptable. And you call yourself a liberal and a progressive. Yeah, I do, because I am. Not bowing and scraping and kowtowing before the unrealistic fantasy world of the Greens and Jill Stein cancel my credibility or my creds, as it were. It means I have a difference of opinion. I also don't like Hillary Clinton. I also don't like Donald J. Trump. But of the three, I recognize that one of two people will be president of the United States. One of those two people is not Jill Stein. Neither is it Gary Johnson or Vermin Supreme. No, it's not. It's going to be Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. Everything else is irrelevant. Not because they're bad people, but because the system works that way. Sorry, third parties are herds of sparkle-farting unicorn cavalry. Not because I say so, but because the system makes them so. It's a two-party system. First past the post. This seems to be incredibly difficult for people to get their heads around. And I don't know why. And it's probably not worth going into. That's right. Absolutely, Labor Man. Scrump is a Jagov. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. That's right. Snork in the chat room pointing out. Now you're pissing off the Vermin Supreme supporters. And, you know, it's not just me that comes in for criticism here. Our correspondent also goes after Carol Baker. And you call yourself a liberal and a progressive. What's even more remarkable is that on the same show where you called Dr. Jill Stein supporters a fucking herd of sparkle-farting unicorn ponies, and I don't think, I'm going to have to go back and check it. I don't think it was exactly that way, but again, quotation marks, so not worth the argument. And refer to Dr. Stein twice as an idiot. You also spoke with Carol Baker about the importance of being respectful in conversations with others when you disagree with them, which I was. Again, I'll note that conversation began with an individual telling me he was going to convert me to Jill Stein, and I said, don't bother, and he, you know, continued. What can I say? It began with rudeness, and, well, if you walk in the door and shit on the coffee table, I don't think there's anybody who thinks that, you know, that the person doing so on the coffee table is entitled to be. No. If it opens up with disrespect, all bets off. I try to keep it respectful. I do. You also spoke with Carol Baker about the importance of being respectful in conversation with others when you disagree with them. The name-calling and insults you've hurled at Stein and those of us who support her made your talk with Carol that night about the importance of respecting the opinions of others sound like nothing more than rank hypocrisy on your part. Well, I am a hillbilly. If you come through the door with shit on your boots and start scraping it all over the carpet, don't expect me to be nice about it. And if the blatant hostility and name-calling weren't bad enough, and they are, you've also used your radio program as a vehicle to repeatedly spread disinformation by not only misrepresenting Dr. Stein's position on issues, but misrepresenting the issues as well. Wi-Fi! The latest was the August 24th broadcast when you made the comment, I don't vote for people who say Wi-Fi is ruining our children's brains, and that Dr. Stein is promoting crazy bullshit about Wi-Fi, and that the science is in on Wi-Fi. All three of these statements about Wi-Fi and or Dr. Stein are false! Only they're not. So we get, she didn't say Wi-Fi is ruining her children's brains. No, I was paraphrasing. And there's a link to the YouTube thing, and
You know, she just wants more research. And you know, we need more research on vaccines. You know, that's all she said, is she wants more research. Boy. Here's the interesting thing. Wi-Fi wasn't even on the radar. That's probably a bad mixed metaphor. Wi-Fi wasn't even on the radar until Jill brought it up. And, yeah, asked the Wi-Fi issue, C-SPAN. She represents a National Institute of Health study that addresses the question of low-level electromagnetic fields, linked to the study. Meta-analysis of studies on the issue of magnetic fields and their relation to incidents of childhood leukemia, yada, yada. There's a lot of controversy, and see, there we are again. That's the heart and soul of it all. The right wing started this, but it's a useful tactic for anybody sometimes when they're advocating a position that's otherwise untenable. You know, report the controversy. Teach the controversy. Remember when the right wing wanted, and they still do, want to do that in the classroom with evolution versus creationism? Yeah. A New York Times article printed earlier this year discusses the ongoing debate on the matter of low-level radiation health risks. This article specifically focuses on cell phone usage, which is not the same as Wi-Fi. And by the way, if you're tweeting out your concerns about Wi-Fi or tweeting out your concerns, a phone, let's see, 60,000 pediatricians of the American Academy of Pediatrics have expressed concerns about RF radiation on children. But, you know, RF radiation is not the same thing as Wi-Fi. There's RF and there's RF. I mean, there's RF at the top of a radio tower that can literally reduce the metal in the fillings of your teeth to, you know, liquid. And then there's, you know, Wi-Fi, which, you know, isn't that. And on and on and on. Your statement on the August 24th broadcast regarding Jill Stein, anyone who says we have to have an immediate moratorium on fossil fuel extraction is not a serious candidate, is another blatant misrepresentation of Stein's position on this issue. She does not call for an immediate moratorium on fossil fuel extraction. What she does call for is a moratorium on new fossil fuel exploration. So we're just going to use the wells that we've got in the ground, and then between now and whenever they run out, you know, when they run out, we run out. I think we have to be sane about where we explore. I don't know if you noticed, but we've opened up a ton more of the Gulf of Mexico for oil exploration, and we don't even need it. It's kind of like the Bakken pipeline. It's oil we don't even need. So it's smart to oppose those things. It's smart to oppose but do you think if the United States imposes a moratorium on new exploration, new wells, that, oh, never mind. Yeah, okay, V.T. Blum, there's a good reference to RF. It'll boil your eyeballs in their sockets. That was how a radio engineer warned me about not getting in the field. Yeah. So there's a problem with a blanket moratorium on new wells and new exploration, because wells play out. We have got to transition away, and we need to do it sooner rather than later. But just turning off the spigot, unless you're willing to see a few million people die for political purity, it's not going to work. So our correspondent closes saying, it's one thing to be in opposition to a candidate running for office. It's quite another to publicly spread disinformation about an issue and a candidate's position on that issue. But you seem to be hell-bent on pissing on Jill Stein, her supporters, and the Green Party at every opportunity. That's really not my goal. My only purpose is to point out the flaws in the system that we have. And I have pointed out in the past ways of dealing with those flaws. You don't like our first-past-the-post system? We're going to need a new constitution. And getting that new constitution is going to be real interesting. I mentioned that the other night and got in trouble for mentioning the fact that there's a vast right-wing movement to have a constitutional convention. And it's terrifying. Let's see. Hell-bent on pissing on Jill Stein, her supporters in the Green Party at every opportunity. Enough is enough. You can continue with your mudslinging and Limbaugh-esque smear campaign against Stein, but I've taken the horn off my web browser's favorites list. Instead, I'll watch and listen to progressive media that doesn't make name-calling and insults of other progressives its stock in trade. Well, I don't think that we quite have risen to the level of stock in trade yet. But, you know, this is just pitiful. Out in purity land, you can't be. I mean, my God. Like I said, I heard Tom Hartman. I saw just this evening Tom Hartman referred to as a Clinton apologist. For doing nothing more than saying that he was not going to vote for Jill Stein and could not be convinced to vote for Jill Stein because it makes no sense. What? Steve from Georgistan says Cletus is running for president.
Oh, Cletus is a good girl. Oh, she's such a good boy. Oh, what a good puppy.
And she's got almost as good. She's got very nearly an even chance of becoming president. As good a chance as Jill Stein has. Yeah, I don't know. It's not enough, and this is where it becomes very, very frustrating for me. It is not enough to not like Hillary Clinton. And of course, if I said if I said or made sport of Hillary Clinton, and I have, but that was okay. Questioning her incredibly terrible judgment. And giving a multitude of examples of it, that's okay. But not, you know, not untouchable Jill. And see, this program has never gone in much for fawning, and we damn sure don't do religion. And when it's okay to criticize everybody but, you know, your preferred, then that's rising to a level of cult status. And frankly, that's one of the things that bothers me most about the Greens, and especially the people who are Steiners, Steiniacs, whatever we want to call them. How about followers? Followers of Jill Stein. That way, maybe that's not insulting. Followers of Jill Stein is that it comes with a fervid level of cultish devotion that I can't get with. I don't do cult. And based on what I've seen, that's what the little teeny tiny itsy bitsy micro minuscule minority of people who support her candidacy are behaving like. Cult members. I mean, if you can't see that pulling a tweet and then modifying it so that you can stay in the good graces of the anti-vaxxers is problematic. I mean, that's kind of culty. I hope the one thing I didn't get called in this was a Clinton apologist, and for that I'm grateful. Because I never will be. See, I'm in the middle of a circular firing squad, metaphorically speaking. Can't make anybody happy. I'm not, I won't bow down and scrape and kowtow to the magnificence of the. Wait a minute. Most brilliant woman ever to walk the face of planet Earth. Namely, you know, Hillary Clinton. But I also won't acknowledge the same about Jill Stein. And for 8 years now, you know, I remember catching grief for suggesting that there needed needed to be a cabinet position called the Department of Jesus, Barack. You know, when he would go out and, you know, say those things that kind of made us all cringe and wince. It all started right after the beginning of his presidency when he sat down to a fine, lovely, multi-course luncheon with right-wing opinion leaders and then invited the progressive press to the White House for some beans and Kool-Aid. No, really, they had drinks out of styrofoam cups. That's what the progressives got. So, I mean, we all, I think, mostly, except for a couple, we can all agree that Donald Trump is toxic. Just got a note from Emilio. Hi, Brother Bob. Here's a snippet of something Trump said earlier today. When Mexico sends their people, they're not sending their best and brightest. They're sending criminals and they're sending rapists, folks. They're not even sending their best rapists. They're sending those one-eyed rapists. They're sending those lazy rapists. You know how those people are. They're sending those rapists that are like, I'll rape you next Monday. I'm watching TV here while they eat their tacos. They're not as good as our American rapists. They're taking work away from our rapists. Thank you, Arthur. Oh, I needed a giggle. I really, really did. Take care, Brother Bob. Hope your daughter's doing okay. Yeah, and I was talking about all that while the stream wasn't up and running, so my apologies. She ain't okay. She is miserable and is presently subject to the tender mercies of the greatest health care system in the history of the world on earth, in the universe, now, today, forever. Amen. Stat. Now, the people who are listening to the podcast are going, he did that at the beginning of the program. Yeah, but nobody heard it live. Sorry. They kept her till 3 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday. Then we went back to their home and kind of sat up with her, and Agnes fretted and fussed and you know, did mommy stuff. And I got home about 8 o'clock last night, because I had to get Margie to work today. And she had a doctor's appointment this afternoon that was rather unsatisfying. Gosh, I hope nothing happens to you between now and whenever we can get you a referral. No shit. So, thank you for asking, and I appreciate it. I appreciate everyone asking. And if I have to bail out, bug out again, you know, I'll let you know. Marty says, I call Hartman a Clinton apologist, but not over Stein. I think much of what you say against Stein is a bunch of BS, but I'm not voting Stein anyway. Among other things, Randy. Randy says, you mean Jesus, Barack, when he chose Eric Holder to not prosecute the banksters, just like Hillary won't prosecute the banksters. Well, that and a number of other things. But that was, you know, that was okay. That fit within the progressive paradigm. But the one thing we can't have is practicality. And that's why we have such a hard time being taken seriously by other segments of the political spectrum. And I don't think anybody can accuse me of being in any wise pro-oil company. I'm not. But it is a reality that people without heat freeze to death in the winter. And that is a big enough problem as it is, given the degree to which we let the oil companies pretty much write their own check. we're probably killing the ability. Well, we're not killing the planet. We're killing the ability of human beings to live on it. And that has got to be treated more seriously by far than it is. But somewhere along the line, we probably do have to have, or it would be beneficial to have, a conversation about where we go as progressive people, what it means. I don't necessarily know that the primary in Florida was any kind of a bellwether. That's the word we use, isn't it? But Debbie Wasserman Schultz thumped the living hell out of Tim Canova. And Alan Grayson got just slobber-knocked by a guy who's about as much of a Democrat as maybe, Hillary Clinton. So is it just because there aren't enough of us? We certainly voted in our millions. We scared the living bejesus out of Hillary Clinton in the primary with Bernie's campaign. But we couldn't get over the hump because the South, the Confederacy, was front-loaded. Deliberately. And so, and I'm open to a conversation about this. I think it would be beneficial. I'd like for it to happen. Sorry, just a message from Brother Deacon Asa. Brother Deacon Asa just asked, where does fundraising stand, you Stein-hating right-wing fascist? Yeah, where's my horse vessel whistle? Never mind. That's a joke. We've got Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge on the table this evening. $200 in gets matched by $200 courtesy of Shirley. We are at present, you know, kind of at zero. And hopefully that will change before we get to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. You Stein-hating right-wing fascist. Impure! Impure! I'm sorry, I gotta laugh because otherwise it's 3 hours of just, you know, weeping at our ineptitude. But it seems like there are some, and I don't think you have to be Sherlock Holmes to find them, there are some clues out there as to how we can better effect our progressive vision going forward. We need to get into the power structure. We need people running for county executive committee. We need people running at county levels, municipality levels, state levels. That's, you know, that's kind of to use a sporting analogy, that's the farm team. That's how you advance people up the ladder. We need to worry less about general elections and more about primaries. And I don't know how we do it. Maybe with me beginning, maybe it begins with people like me tendering a sincere and heartfelt apology to anyone I've offended. You know, and I'm sorry that we've got somebody who's walking away from the conversation, walking away from the community. That makes me sad. Because this is not the, you know, this isn't a nursery school. This isn't romper room. Hopefully we discuss things and we come to reasonable solutions. But sometimes people just, you know, throw their stuff down and stomp away. And it does. It saddens me because, you know, this isn't some multi-million-dollar enterprise with Gulfstream 5 jets and Maybachs and for all the kidding. It's not. The only reason the Horn exists is to provide a forum for people who you know, for people who aren't provided a forum anywhere else. And even going back to the call that our correspondent referred to, which so incensed that person, even though Mad Mike was told at the beginning of that conversation, don't bother to try to convert me to Green or Jill Stein, I still gave him 30 minutes. Tell me another program anywhere that will do that in the name of fostering something approaching conversation. Just a second here. Thanks to Brother Deacon Asa, who just took us a fourth of the way toward meeting Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. And he did so taking time away from something that appears to be, you know, pretty doggone important. So thanks for doing that. But no, seriously. We don't exist here, and I really do appreciate the kind words that were tweeted at me earlier within the last couple of days over on the Twitter. Well, where'd it go? I'll find it in a minute. Or not. Anyway, I got a tweet saying that the horn and what we do here is the best non-commercial progressive broadcasting, period, bar none. Earther saying, I've loved Alan Grayson for being such a strong voice, congressman with guts, as it were. Then I heard about the domestic violence charges from his wife and some other stories, and I was disheartened. What do you know about that? I wasn't there, so I don't know. I know the response, and I know the reporting was damning. I'm suspicious of just about any media in America. But there were other things that also made me begin to call Alan Grayson into question. The hedge fund thing was really bothersome. But really, I think with Alan Grayson, it's just a simple case of he overstepped himself. And was not. I mean, I don't think he was ever going to win that Senate primary. I just don't. But anyway, just to get back to the topic at the hand, and there are more topics, please believe me. This community exists for dialogue and discussion. It only goes downhill when people start screaming and carrying on. And I'll try, I really will try, to be as genial as I can. But, you know, I do get frustrated, and I'm deeply frustrated. I want a more progressive Democratic Party, and I am absolutely paranoidly convinced that the Greens exist and are funded in order to draw the progressive impulse away from the Democratic Party. Who would want to do that? Well, the centrist Democrats would like to do that. And, of course, the Republicans would like to do that. But by all means, let's take the progressive impulse and put it out somewhere where it can't be any threat to anybody, which is exactly what the Green Party is, in my considered opinion. If you took all the energy that was inside the Green Party and it was redirected into the Democratic Party, well, the Democratic Party got shaken to its very foundations this year. You build on that and something good can happen. You run off into the weeds, ain't nothing going to happen. And by ain't nothing going to happen, I mean the Democratic Party, as it is presently constituted, is not going to die. It's going to get stronger. It's going to get worse than what it is we're complaining about now. I've been alongside, shoulder to shoulder with Boss Man Wayne for a lot of years now, and what he said some years back is the absolute truth to me. I do not have time in my life to build a third party, but I do have time to fix the one that the one that can be fixed. And it really comes in as simple as that. From Todd, an email, subject line, say what? It appears to me you are very accommodating to diverse and opposing views. I don't understand the acrimony. If you put up with me... But that's the thing, it's not a matter of putting up with. But emotions are so rank and so raw right now. And they're going to stay that way, apparently, up until November 8th and perhaps beyond. That, at least from where I stand inside what passes for the progressive movement, we're trying to shatter into a million tiny pieces. And the only thing I'll say, only thing I can say to that is, if that's where we're headed, then maybe there wasn't much to us to begin with. And I don't want to think that, because I've been witness to too many good impulses, too much hard work. But I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think things are okay when they're not. I'm not going to tell you that, golly gee, Jill Stein's going to pass out loaves and fishes to the multitudes, and then become president. Because she's not. Maybe she'll win in 2020. But she ain't going to win anything in 2016. Wish to God she'd run for an office she can win at. If she is as brilliant as her followers say, then she'd be a force to be reckoned with in the Congress. Or even in a state legislature. But not president. And while I'm at it, one other thing. Citizens United. I could not more forcefully support an overturning of that odious, nasty Supreme Court ruling. Or even a fix via the Congress, if we ever had a responsible Congress. But, you know, why continue down that path? But I think we would do well to take a breath and realize that getting rid of Citizens United is not going to fix all of our problems. It's not. It is not a cure. It is a palliative, a panacea. It's also a start. But there is no way to get around the fact that it takes a lot of time, energy, and money to run a political campaign. And I don't think it is very effective or, well, it's not very realistic to think that suddenly political campaigns are going to become sweetness and light if we just get rid of Citizens United. And yes, I'm speaking broadly. But I happen to know, for instance, and being in West Virginia, a lot of old-school, old-style retail door-knock and handshake and baby-kiss and politics still applies. But even to do that is expensive. I've been in meetings where I found out, for instance, how much it costs to buy a bunch of yard signs. And it is brutally, ungodly expensive. And you know what? Yard signs, is that political corruption? Because I need to know, I think we need to establish some sort of a ground rule here. Are yard signs politically corrupt? I hate them. They're a blight on the landscape. But if you're running for office, you have to get people to know you're running for office somehow. And even the most pure of purity-driven candidates cannot knock on every damn door. And even if you got 15 or 20 or 50 volunteers, you still can't knock on every door. You cannot call every phone. Spending money on the modern equivalent of a yard sign, namely internet advertising, which everybody hates, is even more expensive than the old school stuff. Even having little hickeys printed that you hang on a door handle if somebody's not home saying, please vote for me because I wanted blah, 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 costs just a horse-gagging load of money. And it's not going to stop costing a horse-gagging load of money if we get rid of Citizens United. But I agree with what's being said in the chat room. Steve from Georgia Stan said, no, it's a step in the right direction. Yes, it is. But you're never going to get, I guess what I'm trying to get across here is you are never going to get money out of politics because money and politics, unless you're living in an authoritarian, totalitarian sort of dictator state, go hand in hand because it costs money to tell people that you want to represent them. And I don't see a way around that. Radio ads, TV ads, you know, Citizens United makes that obnoxious because no matter how much you spend as a decent human being candidate, the Republicans, you know, the birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, libertarians, what have you, the birchers, and they can always spend more because Citizens United inures to their benefit, and don't think for a minute that they didn't know that when the case was brought before the Supreme Court. But even if Citizens United goes away, it still costs a damned horse-gagging fortune to run a TV ad, a radio ad, and don't even talk to me about the price of a newspaper ad. Holy cow! Okay, I got to check in. Anybody having a problem getting the stream? I just got a note from Smitty saying that he lost the stream. I show no problem here. Let me know. Let's go back to a couple of notes. subject line, let us get green, L-E-T-T-U-C-E. Yeah, see, yeah, wordplay. The Greens are the fringe party that backs fringe ideas of effectively fringe candidates. Yeah, plus a few decent people. This can be a good thing. It may sometimes get a handful of progressive or socialist ideas into the political discussion, but only sporadically and as a sort of consciousness-raising exercise, perhaps. But politics is real-world dirt, and about where the power actually is. I joined the Greens in 2000 more out of protest and disgust than anything else, but I know the reasons are more symbolic than anything else, and I vote the Dem ticket anyway, with a few local exceptions. The real fringe ideas of the Green current pick, the tinfoil hat stuff about Wi-Fi, radiation, etc., believe it. With all the other toxic waste lurking about in your food and water, the hormones in the beef, mercury in the fish, the industrial waste masquerading as processed food, you should embrace your little cell phone gleefully and wish it were the only evil out there. Gotta admit, too, the name Green gives me a crisp, cool feeling. Yes, yes, absolutely, Steve in China. It has a refreshing burst of flavor. Thanks, Asa. Asa telling me stream okay. Good. Loud and clear, says Arthur. Will in Chicago, loud and clear. Thank you, Randy. Stream's fine. Good. So let me just tell Smitty. This really is a full... the only reason I do this is, well, it's the same motivation for everything else that informs what happens. We want everybody to participate who wants to. You know, that's why nobody has to pay anything to get the program. That's why when you contribute, you're contributing not just for yourself, and it is kind that you do, but you're making it possible for people who otherwise would not be able to pay to have access to be able to listen and comment and offer their thoughts too. Ron and Raleigh, making matters worse, Ron. Thanks for not helping some more. Where are Tree Beard and Celery? Are they Greens? I'll bet they are. Yeah. Thank you, Harold. Internet stream okay there at the home office of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. The Sochtress was a big part of making sure that we beat the Swede, which we did, which was wonderful. Subject line, yard signs. Darlene says, yep, just had three political yard signs put up on my lawn around the start of your show. They do educate the public on who's running because many people are clueless. This is a big weekend for name recognition as we have the major annual fair happening down the road, and there will be tons of traffic. No problem with the stream here in Connecticut. Connecticut. See what she did there? Connecticut. Yeah, I call it Connecticut too, but yeah. But in this case, yes, Darlene is connected in Connecticut. And the biggest problem with yard signs is, you know, getting the damn things cleaned up after all is said and done. But this is, you know, what's coming is Labor Day weekend. And it is the official beginning, I mean, in earnest, of the general election campaign season. And I'm trying to decide it, and this marks me out as a coward, I understand it. I just can't afford new tires or a new car or a new house. I'm sticking by my principle saying there will be no Hillary sign in my yard. Jim Justice doesn't need a sign in my yard. But I'm thinking very seriously about putting a sign up for the challenger to my congressman, Evan Jenkins. You know, the guy who is such a shitheel that he brought a camera crew during the flooding in June. He brought a camera crew to film him talking to people about the flood. And bless their hearts, the people ran him off. It was pathetically weaselly. But I might put out a couple of yard signs. I wish I had a yard sign that just said, please, for the love of God, get rid of Tom Fast before he embarrasses us anymore. And that's really the nature of this election cycle, isn't it? We're voting against people. I was listening to National Petroleum Radio on the way home yesterday, and I heard a report from North Carolina in which they sent some young woman who ended every sentence as if it were a question, even when they weren't, but she went to talk to black North Carolinians about Hillary, and what she came up with, and her takeaway on that was that, well, dang it, there weren't just a whole lot of people who were excited about her. People mostly were citing as a reason for voting for her the fact that, well, because Trump. And that's why I'm still nervous. And I think I will be until November 9th. Unless, and of course, it is, you know, the runaway that we're all promised. But, you know, damn. I'm getting a little worn out with the crazy. Did half of T-Rump's Latino advisory panel quit on him today? Nah, I read that somewhere. Well, okay, Will in Chicago understands. Bob, when I was in Phoenix, Will writes, I considered where I lived. I did not tell that many people that I'm Jewish. So your trepidation about yard signs is something I understand. Earther says the Dems, the party, have an infrastructure already in place, ready to be taken over, as it were. To be effective, a third party has to build theirs from scratch. What takes longer? Political parties are open to the public in theory and in practice. To infiltrate and take over a regular for-profit corporation, you have to have billions. To take over a party, you need lots of people and commitment. Yes, this isn't easy, but it's fairly inexpensive and it's accessible. Of course, ideological purity is more appealing. It's more appealing to think about starting an organization from scratch where you know that everyone thinks like you and you don't have to deal with any outside people. I get that, but it's still a lot more work than taking over an existing organization. It absolutely is. And then, Earther, and then we have to come back to the fact, and it is a fact, it's not a theory, it's a fact, like gravity is a fact, that the only way a third party ever succeeds in the United States of America in the system that we presently have had and have had since 1787 is by becoming the second party and having one of the two parties die. Hint. The next time you see some breathless report from the for-profit media telling you that the Republican Party is dying, it's going to die, Donald Trump is killing the Republican Party, hang on, if it happens to be a newspaper, hang on to the newspaper and wait until you've got some mackerel guts you need to insult by wrapping it up in whoever wrote that. Because that's the fearful reality here. Namely, that we have, and I'm going to come back to this, maybe again and again and again until you're sick of it, probably already are, we have a fascism problem in the United States of America. We have an authoritarian right-wing problem in the United States of America. And it ain't going away. And it'll be here in 2020. And if Donald Trump loses by a little or by a lot, there's going to be a hell of a lot of pissed off fascists out there running around with guns. The Republican Party is not dying. The Republican Party has horse-gagging amounts of money. We're rough on the horse this evening, aren't we? And they control more than half of the state legislatures. And half of the more than half of the governor's offices. And so anybody who says the Republican Party is dying, I'm really at a loss for how to understand that, except, you know, maybe, well, you know, Mr. Hond.
What are you people, on dope?
Best I got. So I realize this, you really probably didn't want to hear this coming back from me bailing out and missing a night of the program. Randy says half a loaf is better than none unless you also starve slowly on a half a loaf. You starve faster on none. So, you know, there's that. And we have $100 to go to meet Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge because I was recently reminded of another contribution that came in overnight. So, yes, $100 to go on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. You know, 10 at 10, 1 at 100, 2 at 50, 4 at 25, 8 at 1250, 16 at 6 and a quarter, etc., etc. And hopefully that will happen, you know, in a little over the next hour and a half or so. It's also Thursday, so naturally that means we have the Green News Report coming up. And, you know, the phone lines are open. And you are welcome, more than welcome, to participate. And I hope you will. The phone lines, well, jump right in. The stress line, 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. The other line, 304-574-8178. From anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. If you've never sent me a contact request, feel free to send me one. But please give me some sort of clue that, you know, you're calling, that you're sending one because you want to, you know, engage in the conversation. Just type Horn or something in the message box, H-O-R-N. Because otherwise I have to say, you know, how do I know you? And then when you don't reply, I think that maybe you wanted me to help you reclaim your Nigerian husband's missing millions of dollars. That's just too much work anymore. And yes, Labor Day weekend is on the way. It's a long weekend, including a Monday holiday. But I see no reason not to be here Monday evening. I think I can honor the people who had to work a hell of a lot harder than most of us have ever known by, you know, talking about it, engaging in conversation about it right here. So I don't know. I'll be here 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time this Monday evening. Barring, of course, any unforeseen circumstances relative to the health and well-being of members of my family. Okay? Yes. So, like I said, the Green News Report is coming up from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And hey, it is. It's the first day of September. And that gives me a good excuse to play one of my favorite pop tunes. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back. It's Thursday, September 1, 2016.
There is no contradiction between being smart on the environment and having a strong economy, and we got to keep it going.
President Obama urges climate action from Tahoe to Hawaii to Midway to his final presidential trip to Asia. Not one, but two rare hurricanes threaten Hawaii as Obama visits. Plus, global insurance industry tells G20 to kick away the carbon crutches.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
This is still a pristine wonder.
Pristine? That, of course, was Jerry Brown, governor of California. And this is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I guess the big question today is, what will arrive in Hawaii first, a hurricane or President Obama.
Yes. As we go to air before the holiday, not one but two rare hurricanes are headed for the big island of Hawaii. Hawaii didn't used to get hurricanes. So if either Hurricane Madeline or Hurricane Lester makes landfall, it will be the first confirmed hurricane to hit the big island of Hawaii since reliable records began in 1949. Now, the storms aren't expected to affect President Obama's visit to Oahu further west, but it underlines the message of his speech, the urgent need to address climate change.
Hurricane Lester?
Yeah.
Lester?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound very scary.
But before Hawaii and before his trip to the G20 summit in China, President Obama stopped over at the 20th annual Lake Tahoe Summit on the California-Nevada border on Wednesday.
Hello, Tahoe! This is really nice. I will be coming here more often.
The president's visit was meant to highlight how two decades of dedicated conservation efforts have succeeded in cleaning up and restoring Tahoe's famously clear waters, even as its economy grew.
The challenges of conservation and combating climate change are connected. When most of the 4.5 million people who come to Lake Tahoe every year are tourists, economies like this one live or die by the health of our natural resources. And we've proven that the choice between our environment, our economy, and our health is a false one. We've got to strengthen all of them together.
Lake Tahoe is one of the oldest and purest lakes in the world, but its ecosystem is in trouble due to global warming and the pressures of human development and pollution. Obama announced additional federal funding for restoration and cleanup of the Tahoe watershed to help manage forest fire risk amid historic drought and help Tahoe manage growth alongside conservation for future generations.
Hurricane Lester?
Yes. Climate change is also the central theme throughout Obama's final presidential trip to Asia, starting with the Pacific Leaders Conservation Summit in Hawaii, and also in an unusual first-ever presidential visit to Midway Atoll, the site of the Battle of Midway in World War II, where he'll focus on rising sea levels, which have already doomed some small Pacific Island nations. Then he heads to China for the G20 summit. At that summit, he will reportedly formally enter the United States into the historic United Nations Paris Agreement, the International Climate Accord to keep global temperatures from rising more than 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. And he will pressure his fellow world leaders to do the same.
Of course, most of those world leaders have already gone along with this, have they not?
Except for China, which says they do plan to sign it this year.
Well, and that's more than we seem to be able to say, because our Congress won't even discuss the matter.
And the global insurance industry is also pushing on climate change. In a blunt statement to the G20 in advance of the summit in China, some of the biggest insurance companies in the world, managing more than $1 trillion in assets, urged G20 leaders to phase out fossil fuel subsidies by 2020. In a statement, the insurers said, quote, "Climate change is the mother of all risks, and that risk is magnified by the way in which fossil fuel subsidies distort the energy market." They call on governments to, quote, "kick away the carbon crutches, reveal the true impact to society of fossil fuels, and take into account the price we will pay in the future for relying on them."
That's the global insurance industry saying that?
Yes, it is.
Those tree-hugging lefties at the global insurance industry?
Yes.
Imagine that.
And they also call for shifting nearly $500 billion a year in fossil fuel subsidies to building renewable and sustainable infrastructure instead.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, Lester, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm. Into this house we're born. Into this world we're thrown.
I always thought that particular song was probably one of the best manifestations of Jim Morrison's voice ever. So much so that it almost doesn't sound like Jim Morrison. Kind of the way that Bob Dylan doesn't sound like Bob Dylan in Lay Lady Lay. which will probably get me hate mail. It's 25 minutes past the hour. We are an hour and 35 minutes away from the end of the program, halfway through. Again, if you want to engage in conversation, you are more than welcome so to do. You know how to do it. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. Other email addresses, not so much. The Jeremiad I received prior to the program from our unsigned author or correspondent went to at least two email addresses that just really don't even exist. So you want to reach me, Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D @gmail.com. That'll make it easier. I want to share this along. The subject line, Grand Canyon Escalade. Mike in Cascadia writes, obnoxious development going into Grand Canyon on Navajo land. 5-day public comment period ends Saturday, like, you know, day after tomorrow. Two very short videos, minute or less for each. Hopefully there will be good audio to go with it. Stand by. Working. Here we go. Oppose the Grand Canyon Escalade.
The proposed Grand Canyon Escalade would be a massive, inappropriate construction project on the east rim of Grand Canyon National Park. As part of the development, a gondola would be plunged into one of the most sacred areas of the canyon, the confluence of the Colorado and Little Colorado rivers. This tramway would potentially deliver up to 10,000 people per day into one of the most remote and fragile areas of the park. At any given time, more than 1,200 people could be on the elevated walkways or at the snack bar mere feet from the Colorado River. This project is not the locally driven and sustainable answer to the sorely needed economic development on the Navajo Nation. The Grand Canyon belongs to all of us for all time. Speak out and oppose this harmful project at AmericanRivers.org/Grand Canyon.
Yeah, okay, I don't have a problem with that, do you? I mean, I got a problem. Ew! And there's some animation that goes with us with it. If you want to find it on YouTube and share it around, oppose the Grand Canyon Escalade. When I first saw that in the subject line, I thought it was a Simpsons joke. It, remember the Canyon Arrow? But there are no more jokes. As someone who has not seen nearly as much of the world as he would like to see, I have an ongoing kind of battle within myself. I mean, I've got a short list of things, you know. I still want to take that walk on March 15th. From the roughly the position of the Domus Publica over to where the Theater Pompey stood. I just want to do that. I mean, some people want to go to Dealey Plaza. I want to take that walk. And I've kind of come to terms with the fact that I probably never will. You know, I want to see the shadow brought on by the rising of the sun on the solstice make the snake crawl down the pyramid at Chichen Itza. But if you stop for a minute and you realize, wait a minute, does that magnificent piece of world heritage really need one more pudgy old pink guy's feet treading all over that? No, it doesn't. I was reminded of this when I saw a video a while back of some members of the Rainbow family, and you know what that is. Well, there was this one particular guy who, you know, screw the rules, dude. Older guy who was, you know, like meditating, you know, in like this meadow where there are like these lovely wildflowers and grasses and things. And some indigenous people came up and said, get out of there. People like you stomping around here is what makes it so hard for this meadow to come back to what it was before it got stomped. what Mike in Cascadia just pointed out to me looks like something that it's another way for people with more dollars than cents to express their privilege. The Grand Canyon doesn't need 1,200 people a day riding wired cable trams down to, I mean, damn. So there's a petition you can sign. 5-day public comment period ends on Saturday, day after tomorrow. And there's a petition you can sign as well at savetheconfluence.com, savetheconfluence.com/petition. Let's check. Mike sent two, so let's check out this one. This is Save the Confluence. Likes won't save the Grand Canyon from the Escalade development. Gosh, it's almost as if they deliberately named it after something people will, the great big gas guzzlers, a bunch of people will drive to, well, Muriel, let's ride the tram down into the Grand Canyon. I'm sure the native peoples won't mind. Developers want to build a tramway to the bottom of the Grand Canyon.
Any notion, any idea of disrupting this area with your jackhammers, with your machinery, or whatever dynamite or explosive you want to bring in here, you're basically destroying a shrine of your mom, your dad, and generations of the past.
That, too, seems pretty straightforward, doesn't it? Thanks, Mike, for bringing that to my attention. I'll go and I'll go and do what I can. Not sure exactly. Well, I wish I felt better about public comment periods. But that's, yeah. Oh, by the way, a great group in the chat room. I told you there'd be more along. Good evening, Anatole and Earther and Hoghead, John CDN, Jug of Punch, Jules, Ken Tucky, Laborman, Sentient Being, Snork, Steve from Georgistan, V.T. Blom, Will in Chicago. Good group in there, and you're welcome to join in, too. And they'll all say howdy if you do. Just go to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room, and then pick out a screen name and a password, and the conversation is rollicking good. And I mentioned Jules a minute ago. Let's go over and check in with Jules. What's up? What's happening, Jules? Oh, Jules. Jules. I've got the right button. Everything's properly connected. Oh, yes, and also capably moderated by longtime indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky. Yes.
Hello.
Oh, there's Jules. Glad you could join us.
I had myself muted in two places, so there we go.
I hate it when that happens. I muted myself for about 8 minutes at the beginning of the program. And I'm echoing.
Yeah.
And I'm echoing.
Okay, well, that works. Whoa. Okay, well, I'm going to mute again there for a second because I have doggies. Well, maybe not. The doggies are getting upset. But, yeah, your daughter, I was we were all very worried about your daughter. People were chatting about, and everyone wanted to make sure that you were doing okay and that she was doing okay. It sounds like you just have a real rough time going about with her.
Yeah, she's not okay. She's miserable. And she is receiving care that is substandard at best.
Substandard at best and inadequate.
Yeah, the hospital in her county, I think we checked, and I think they've actually got 24 beds for people who are sick. The rest of the hospital has been converted. It's essentially a triage station attached to a nursing home now. All the other beds are long-term nursing home care, so as to keep the facility financially viable.
Wow. That is horrible. See, that's the thing. People talk about health care, and all they think about is insurance right now because we have the American ACA, right? Well, people think health care, they think insurance. It's not health care isn't insurance. Health care is the part that takes care of you. The insurance is the part that pays for the part that takes care of you. And the part that takes care of you is a part that, I mean, both parts need fixed. It's not just the insurance part. It's the part that takes
care
of you.
No, but Jules, the insurance, it's at least my considered opinion that the insurance part, which, of course, has a profit motive built into it. For instance, Medicaid in this state is not simply administered by the state, which would mm-hmm. make perfect sense if it was. No, mm-hmm. instead, the for-profit aspect of insurance administration had to stick their grubby little paws out to get a chunk of, you know, it's like in The Godfather, you know, get their beaks wet. And so some places take one kind of health care from one of the providers, and other places don't take the other kind. And it's all the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's made needlessly complex by virtue of the fact that some CEO of some health insurance delivery outfit has not figured out that they don't put U-Hauls behind hearses. Because
yeah.
they're just not rich enough yet.
No, I agree with that. But there's also a problem with the way our healthcare system is designed. We have, in a lot of places, here in Fort Wayne at least, and I know a lot of cities are like this, we have hospitals that are buying up, literally buying up doctors. Doctors cannot be independent anymore. They have to be with a conglomerate, because if they are not with a conglomerate, they cannot exist. I have a neurologist that is trying to be independent and be separate from these conglomerates because he doesn't want to be ruled. He doesn't want to have to follow these rules where they have to do X number of patients per minute, you know, or X number of patients per minute. And if you want to be independent and go by your own standards and go by your own pace, it's virtually impossible. I mean, they have made it virtually impossible, and it's a profit motive. You're exactly right. It probably does have something to do with the insurance companies because they're trying to pay for, you know, as little time as possible. But
well, I mean, I in a totally unrelated situation, I had a right winger explain to me that no, capitalism is not involved in a not-for-profit hospital. Not-for-profit means that they're not capitalist. And, of course, the guy was a right-winger. I was like, really?
Yeah.
Goddamn. So none of the stuff that's sold to the hospital is sold for profit. None of the drugs, none of the IV sets, none of the saline bags, none of the machines that go ping are sold for a profit. You know, that's one of the biggest scams in America today, the idea that something like a multi-million-dollar-a-year hospital can be not-for-profit. Go look at the salary of the hospital administrator of a not-for-profit hospital. Hint, the administrator is not going home and eating beans every night.
Very true, very true.
They're showing up to work in a Mercedes-Benz. They got a nice home in the in the country, a river of beer flowing over their grandmother's paisley shawl. And they are every bit as capitalist as anybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a doctor and I don't play one on the radio. But I found out by virtue of my own little misadventure in healthcare delivery. You know, I had to have a CT of my innards the other day, and
mm-hmm.
so you know they gave me the IV contrast, which is radio opaque.
Yes,
I think that's the right word. But they also gave me 2 pints of this pretty vile, sweet, radio opaque contrast to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Why are we doing this?" And they said, "Well, you know, the IV will light up your gallbladder and your liver and your kidneys, but if we want to see what's going on from your esophagus down through your stomach, small intestine, large intestine,
they need the separate one. Yes.
They need the stuff that you drink. So, where is an appendix, Jules? I mean, I know you know, but which part of the system is that in?"
It's in your lower intestines. It's right outside.
Right,
of your
so it's not the thing that an IV contrast is going to light up now, is it?
So you drink the contrast.
Well, no, that's what I just explained. There's the drinky and there's the IV. The IV will show
your
So, my dear daughter, they gave her the IV contrast, which will show her gallbladder, her liver, et cetera, kidneys, yada, yada. But they didn't give her the oral contrast, which therefore did not give them a good picture of her appendix. And then they sent her home at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Are you serious? They did not give her the oral contrast?
No.
They didn't.
No.
Oh, my good God. Oh,
and so
God.
She and they said, you know, you just go home and we hope you feel better and follow up with your primary caregiver.
No.
So the next morning, bleary-eyed, she called and said, I need an appointment with. And of course, she doesn't get to see a doctor, Jules. She sees a doctor.
Yeah, I
know. You know, a nurse practitioner.
I know.
And so they went to see her at, like, the end of the business day today.
Oh, no.
And she was told, well, you know, just go home. And if it gets real bad, go back to the ER, okay? And we'll see what we can do about getting you a referral to a surgeon.
Which ER, and why is it that, why a referral to the sort? Is there another hospital someplace around here that you can go to? No,
That's the only hospital for three counties.
Oh, Jesus, fuck. Come on, seriously?
And, now, she can, if all the stars align, she can go down to Charleston. Where she can stand in line with the overdoses and the opiate addicts and wait on a gurney in the hallway like my son-in-law did a few months ago. He spent nearly 72 hours laying on a gurney in a hallway. After having had seizures.
Oh, no way.
I'm not kidding. Well, and they would probably,
I shouldn't have asked that.
And I offer this up only as an example of the fact that this is not the greatest healthcare system in the world. It's great if you're filthy rich, okay? If mm-hmm. you are shake your booty from Abu Dhabi, you can fly over to Cleveland Clinic, rent out an entire floor. And it's the best healthcare system on earth.
Yeah.
But exactly. if you are a Medicaid patient, or even if you're if you've got, you know, regular insurance, not so much. Because the whole system, Jules, is geared toward maximizing the financial profit of the system. Which goes back to precious Heather Manchin Bresch and her EpiPen fiasco.
Oh, good Lord, yes.
The only, and I know you know, but the only reason that's a problem, or the reason that's a problem, is when the Affordable Care Act came through, corporations related to healthcare realized that there was going to be a broad and deep stream of corporate welfare money flowing through the land. And so if insurance, and I mean, this is just how they think, because remember, Heather Bresch, the CEO of Mylan Pharmaceuticals, she's not a biologist. She's not a biochemist.
Mm-hmm.
She's not a doctor. She's not even a doctor. She's not a CNA.
No.
She's a woman with a BS in political science.
Yeah.
And so she talks to the accountants. The accountants talk to her. And they figure that since... And they ran a campaign, you know. It went something like this. Food allergies and sting allergies, any kind of allergies can be life-threatening.
Anyone with any kind of an allergic reaction needs to make sure they've got a couple of EpiPens in their house and take them with them at all times. And, you know, your Elks Club, your Lions Club, you know, everybody's got to have EpiPens. And then they turned around and they jacked up the price once they had succeeded in making sure that insurance was going to pay for them.
Yeah.
Pure capitalism at its filthiest.
Oh, yes.
And if shameful. And if there was, why do I bother? If we had an actual responsive government, it wouldn't have been allowed to work that way in the first place, Jules.
No, it wouldn't have been. You're right. Because they would have stepped in and they would have taken care of it. We would not have had this happening. We would have had our Medicare, our Medicaid would have had prices in place that would have said, you are not going to charge people this, or we're not going to pay this. And if they would have had their prices set, then they would have had prices across the board pretty much.
Meanwhile, to be fair, Medicaid reimbursement rates, and I hear this from people in the profession whom I trust and believe, Medicaid reimbursement rates
mm-hmm.
are embarrassingly low.
For doctors and for treatments.
Yes.
But not necessarily for medications.
Right. But Medicaid reimbursement rates for physicians and caregivers is ridiculously low. And
this is true.
And it is compounded by the fact that the individual several states get to administer it. And they administer it by doing things like taking some of the money that they get and farming it out to asshole corporations that aren't even in the same state, who then are in the business of saying no and denying pre-certs. Because after all, they get more money if they say no to more people, because that means the money's not being spent on anybody's health care. And yet you run across right-wing types who will say, well, you know, this just proves a socialized medicine's a giant failure. That's what it is. Socialism, commies.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically what it is. But yet they'll let the pharmaceutical companies screw them in the ass. I mean, just absolutely, really, really is it's a fucked up system. I mean, it's completely fucked up. And what I'm hearing in West Virginia is that they're actually not even paying. The Medicaid isn't even really paying the doctors at this point. They're kind of being delinquent with their payments. So,
right. And who is that? I mean, after all, who's administering it? It ain't the state of West Virginia anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So
the numbers are going to start dropping, and then the patients are the ones that are ultimately going to get have problems. And what's going to happen is that the state's going to end up losing funding.
And in a couple of years, some Republicans from that Republican Party that is not dying. I had a note from Kim in New Jersey a little bit ago saying, thanks for pointing out the current myths that the mainstream media are throwing at us. The Republican Party's dying. Hillary will win in a landslide. Dems will take back the Senate and have a chance of taking back the House. This will be an election that will be too close to call on election night. A real potential to be a repeat nightmare of 2000, signed Kim in New Jersey, all of which I'm in complete agreement with. And the thing is, since the Republican Party isn't going to be going anywhere anytime soon, after a couple of years of screwed up administration on a state level of Medicaid, the Republicans, the teabaggers, the birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, and booger eaters will say, see, it don't work. We need to get out of this like right now, even though the state has not spent a damn dime of its own money. I mean, you want to talk about just organizational stupidity. Why? And this is a disease, Jules, and you know it. This is a disease that was foisted upon us by the right wing. Well, you know, we'd like for it to be some block grants to the states, not administered by that big old massive federal government up there. And the only reason they wanted that was so that they could get their front feet in the trough and then start trying to wiggle in the back trotters, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, most definitely. I mean, they wanted to be in control of it so that they could massively disperse it.
No, so they could rip it off. I mean, think about...
They could rip it off.
Think about the block grants for welfare that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago. In a place like Louisiana, less than 11% of welfare monies block granted to the state of Louisiana actually go to poor people who need money and food.
Yeah.
The other 89%, Jules, go to pet projects of a Republican legislature.
Yeah. And those pet projects don't do anything to help the people. If anything, that, you know, they end up lining the pockets of those legislators and in one way or another. If they don't go through kickbacks or roundabout, some way or another, they end up helping out. And you know it.
And now I've got a note from Ray down in Florida. Ray tells me Medicaid only pays once a year. And yeah, since Ronnie, it has been only a small percentage of plastic or private payer. Hospitals and MDs really hate it. Well, that, you know, and see, that's the thing. These are things that are set up to fail. How many different places are there that we can look, Jules, and find these examples? Consider Amtrak, okay? Republicans hate Amtrak, so they try to starve it to death. Right? So you wind up with antiquated passenger trains running over freight rails. And it's like a railroad train that's running on cinder blocks.
Yeah, and you have old rails that are getting disserviced. And what happens? You have these rails that are not serviced correctly or serviced properly, and you have these trains that are getting derailed, and you have all of these. You're starting to have accidents. You're starting to have trains that are derailing, and you know we have these derailed trains with these oil tanks on them, and what the fuck, you know, explosions, gas in the the oil in the
water.
Yeah,
didn't we have another one of those not too awfully long back?
Yep, we had one in Oregon not too long ago. Right, almost down in Portland.
I thought there was another one even more recent.
There was one even close soon, even more recently, and I can't even remember where that one was at, because the one in Portland was here about a month and a half ago. There was one even sooner. I can't remember what it was, but I think there was.
How many?
Oh God, right offhand, this year. How many have we had this year?
Right.
Oh, God. Major ones, I can think of at least five or six of them that have been major ones, I think. Four to six? Chat room, help us out.
Too many?
Too many. Way too many. Because, I mean, when we have these, what the problem is that they don't get cleaned up. They're not properly cared for, and the people in the region end up getting sick. So we have the initial accident with the damage that is done to the rails. We have the damage that is done to the carts. We have the damage that is done to the existing environment. Plus, we have the remaining health effects to the people that are around there. Something that I read earlier today, the EU is actually, when they get together here, here coming up, but the insurers in the European, not in the European Union, but in the G20, they are throwing a fit because they want guarantees that folks are, that the G20 is going to start doing something about their oil subsidies and start cutting back on oil subsidies because of the environmental impact and the fact that the folks that the oil companies are not putting in their fair share, and they're having all of these disasters, and these disasters are causing billions and billions in dollars in damage, and it's adding up so much that it's actually going up into past what they are even putting in, and it's becoming more of a risk than it is a benefit to have them in the to be insuring them. And they're getting, you know, the insurers of the group are getting just absolutely sick of it. And they're saying, you know, we want a greener planet because you guys are being too much of a risk for us.
Well, and it's not, it costs money. I mean, look,
exactly.
And I know weather's not the same as climate, but, and yeah, it's been a relatively quiet hurricane system, but it looks like this is going to be a whopper heading up on the Gulf Coast of Florida. And like I said, you know, our buddy Jay Cruz, and, you know, we may disagree on little things from time to time, but the fact of the matter is he's been hollering about climate change for years now because he sees it every mm-hmm. day. You know, it
yeah.
can't rain in South Florida without parts of South Florida flooding now that didn't used to flood. Meanwhile, I got a question in from Mark, also in Florida. Could you ask Jules the wholesale cost for IV saline solution if she knows?
Right offhand, I couldn't tell you, but I could probably find it out pretty quick. The insurance, the insurers worth $1.2 trillion tell the G20 to stop funding fossil fuels by 2020. This is from Climate Home, by the way.
Yeah.
Climate change is the mother of all risks, says Avia CEO, and hundreds of billions of annual government assistance to oil and gas companies is simply unsustainable. So, I mean, they're just putting their foot down and saying they're not going to do it anymore. But, I could probably find out the wholesale cost of saline pretty easy.
I mean, and then versus the retail cost. And, of course, the retail cost will vary from, you know, hospital to hospital. That's like one of the things I heard the other day. People were talking about problems with for-profit insurance under the Affordable Care Act and high-deductible policies. And, of course, you had the usual obligatory soundbite from the guy who's all mad at that Obamer because he doesn't run everything. And he was mad because he didn't used to have a copay, and now he has a copay. Because he chose a plan with, you know, a high deductible and a high copay.
Mm-hmm.
And what the reporter said, and this was, again, National Petroleum Radio, said was that, well, you know, the original idea of high deductibles and copays was to encourage people to be smart healthcare consumers. And about blew the horn and ran into a ditch. Because it was pretty. I don't know what it's like in somewhere like Chicago or New York or L.A. or San Francisco, etc. But I know what it's like here. And mm-hmm. out in rural America, there's no shopping around. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, I'm going to be a smart healthcare shopper. I'm going to choose that one, or wait, that's the only one there is.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, healthcare is not, healthcare isn't sausage. All right? Okay, so, you know, or green beans or whatever. Maybe you'll go to a different store because they got a better price on something there. But you know what? When you need health care, you can't go in and say, well, you know, and of course the libertarians want this. But you can't go in and go, okay, doc, how much are you going to charge me for my to take my appendix out? I mean, it's about to rupture and everything, but I want to make sure that you're price competitive. No, you go, help me.
Mm-hmm.
And so the myth of the cost conscious healthcare consumer
mm-hmm.
is a big steaming pile.
Yeah,
and that could only have been sold by someone who is so damn privileged that they never actually had to worry about where their healthcare was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And they damn sure never got sent home with what appeared to be appendicitis and a note to come back if it keeps hurting.
Yeah.
By the way, Mark has answered his own question. A bag of IV saline is $1 wholesale. It is $99 retail.
It can be charged up to $787 for an adult in a hospital.
And, you know, it's not like even working folks with the Medicaid expansion, it's not like, you know what, Marlene, I'm bored. I think I'm going to go to the hospital. I don't know. I mean, I'll just get them to stick a bag of saline in me and tell them my poo's been a little bit runny and just been feeling kind of lethargic and down. Maybe get some meaningless blood work. What do you say? I think that'd be pretty good weekend, don't you, Marlene?
Yes, Emery dear, yes.
I mean, Jesus, Jules.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole system is infected by these capitalist notions of greedy poors.
Yeah. Oh, let me make a correction. That 787, that's $546 for the sailing plus $127 administration cost. I apologize. So his I believe it was 86. $0.86 for the bag. So it is up charged in the hospital to $546 for the sailing itself.
Jesus.
By the time the hospital gets it, and that's just for the, and not for the administration, so.
Oh, but by the way, they did tell her that, just going back, even though they didn't see her appendix, they said, oh, it looks like you got some kidney stones and gallstones. That gallbladder's got to go.
That's a typical problem in your area, is it not?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Gallbladder issues.
But the thing is, they didn't rule out appendicitis.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you've got that thing, and some of this is just old school, old-fashioned doctrine. When you're laying flat on your back and they whack you on your right heel and you scream and you come up off the gurney,
mm-hmm.
known as the heel strike.
What was the right blood cell count?
Don't know.
If her white cell count was elevated, they should have taken her in. I mean, they should have done something.
Well, that's the thing. They're really not allowed to do surgery at that hospital.
Got ya.
And so by telling her, well, if it gets any worse, come back, that means that they get to bill again, but they're still not going to be able to do anything. This is frustrating. And now, I mean, it looks like one of the things we're looking at is that the last member of my family who isn't me is going to lose a gallbladder.
Yeah.
I have jealously hung on to mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until you find out what your have you found out your CAT scan results yet?
Yeah. Yeah.
And how did that turn out?
Prefer not to say.
Okay. That's
how's Nicole?
Nicole is actually doing really well. She is looking like she may actually be out of the hospital tomorrow.
Oh, goody. So is she, are they satisfied they got it all?
Well, so far so good. We don't know yet. She won't know about any additional treatment until probably about 2 weeks. And a week and a half to 2 weeks, she'll know if she'll need to have any kind of additional treatment as far as chemotherapy or radiation. They need to check and see if both tumors are still within stage one, and if they are both the same type of cancer. Believe it or not, the hope is that they are both different types of cancer, and that seems really, really odd. But if they're
two different types, that means they're two different types in two separate locations, and not one type that has spread.
Exactly. Bingo.
I get it.
Bingo. And that seems like the strangest logic in the world, but it's better than having one that has spread, because if it starts spreading, then that's never a good thing. So we will see within the next week and a half or 2 weeks, and hopefully she'll be back up and on the air within a few weeks. She's figuring about a month of being off air, so probably about another 3 weeks or so. I don't think.
Well, I'm seeing Barquay in the chat room says Laffy says the second mass was cancer and she'll need chemo after all.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yuck.
Well, they got it tested and yeah. Okay. Yeah, I haven't been able to check Laffy's feed, and I haven't checked Nicole's since about half an hour or 45 minutes ago. So,
okay,
been pretty much on top of it. So, but
well, it has been a lovely conversation, and I do appreciate it.
Yes, it has been. Just so folks know, I am I'm in charge this weekend. So
I'm in charge here. What are you, Alexander Haig now?
And yes, I am in charge. No, I'm in charge over F. I'm not in charge, but I am going to be taking over for Tom for the next couple of days. So I'm going to be on my show in the morning from 10 to noon, and then I'm going to be on his show from 9 until midnight. So,
okay, is Thomas okay?
Yes, he's fine. He's more than fine. He's going to be in Detroit with his girlfriend for the next couple of days.
Glory!
So.
Yay!
Yes.
Yay!
Yay! And he's going to get to stay there until maybe even through Monday. Who knows? I might have the next 3 days, right? Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yeah, 4 days. Oh man!
Wow.
So, folks are going to just get
that
tired.
Could be exciting.
Yes, I told everyone we're going to party.
All right, Jules, you take care. Good talking to you, dear. Have a lovely evening.
You too. Bye bye, honey.
Bye now. Our buddy Jules from FYINation.com. Let's see. So 6 minutes past the hour, and Steve and Karen and Ms. Cletus just took our Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge remainder down to $80. Let me double check that. Daggummit. Well, just a second. But at any rate, we've taken a big chunk out of it, and hopefully we can meet Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge to get the first of the month off and running. Yeah, $80 to go. And, you know, I mentioned that I was going to be working. I planned on being behind the mic this coming Monday, and I got some of the darndest messages. One of which were pretty much uniform in their opinion. One said, "I don't think anybody other than absolutely essential services should work on Labor Day." And I got another exemplar was, you know, take the night off, brother. So I tell you what, if we can meet Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge this evening and keep up with fundraising tomorrow, Friday on the front porch, and knock down what would otherwise be Monday so that we stay on track, I'll take Monday off. And I won't lie to you. I wouldn't mind to do that. So step one is finishing off Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge this evening. And then tomorrow evening, raising another $200. And between Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge and tomorrow, that'll mean that we are good through Monday evening. And, yeah, I'll take a long weekend, which probably would not be the worst idea in the world, because I don't know what's going to be going on. I don't know which hospital we're going to be running to. So that's how that's going to work. Let's go over and talk to Will in Chicago or nearby. Hey, Will.
Greetings, Bob, from the shores of Lake Michigan in northwest Indiana, the part of the state that desperately wishes it had been annexed by Illinois, even with Bruce Bruiner as the governor there, because most of the people here are glad at the thought that Mike Pence will not be governor for another term, or suffice it to say, Pence is typical of the Republican Party now, and they seem to only care about the donor class, let alone...
Well, no, wait, wait, that's unfair, Will. They don't just care about the donor class, they care about the precious little fetuses.
Yes, but that's because that gets them campaign donations.
Okay, see donor class above, right, okay.
Yes, it's kind of a recursive loop. But I tuned in a bit late since I had to do a few things, so I missed who seems to be upset with you and your stance. But the problem with third-party candidacies was aptly described by a history professor whom I took a class with while working on my master's in education, who said that someone could easily write a book called The History of America's Third Parties with a subtitle, Kicking Your Own Ass. In Illinois, Alexei Janulis was the Democrat candidate for U.S. Senator, lost to Mark Kirk, and the Green Party candidate got about 100,000 votes. So I think one of the problems I have with the Green Party is it's really not doing much at the local level because a party has to be built from the ground up.
Well, we've seen the shenanigans, the ongoing shenanigans and escapades of that dirtbag in Maine by the name of Paul LePage. I mean, he melted right down to the ground last week. And isn't he the governor of Maine because of some good old-fashioned third-party politics? I mean, yes. I'm not talking about the Ralph Nader kind where if the Democrats who voted for George Bush would have just voted for Al Gore, Florida wouldn't have mattered. I'm talking about really, really made an impact on the election.
I think so in that case, although Maine politics is not my forte. But I think that one of the problems we have is we're going to have to figure out as progressives, where do we go from here? Do we try to transform the Democratic Party? If so, we have to start from the ground up, which means school boards, city councils, county commissioners, state reps, state senators, and then work our way up the political food chain. Or do we have a third party? And the problem with third parties is they very often seem to be consigned to irrelevance, or if they're lucky, such as the progressives in the early 1900s, their ideas are picked up by another party. Many of the progressive ideals were later picked up by the Democrats, although they had to wait a long spell between 1912 to 1933 for FDR to pick up a lot of their policies. But I have no illusion this election could very well be close, simply because there's a lot of people out there who have deep resentments whom Trump is trying to reach. The media seems to be more concerned about the horse race than the issues, and will be glad if it gets tighter because of ad revenue. Don't think that we can presume anything, and Hillary Clinton has a lot of negatives, which explains why that NPR reporter had many people say they were voting against Trump. For now, I view the priority as defeating Trump, because with Hillary, we can at least theoretically pressure and not lose some of the gains we've seen. The case of Trump, I believe he will be busy measuring the throne he will put somewhere just out of sight of the Oval Office and tell Mike Pence, please, you do whatever you want. I'll focus on making America great again. As John Kasich said, Trump Jr. Told him in offering him a seat. I mean, essentially, we are not in a situation I like. I voted for Bernie. I still support Bernie's ideals. But how would I say it? if I have muddy ground to stand on, at least it's better than being swept by a river. And considering the fact that the extreme right wing, the alt-right, is supporting Trump's candidacy, and that Bannon and Kellyanne, is that her last name? The two new people in his campaign, the SPLC, Southern Poverty Law Center, before they were part of a right-wing group that includes extremists, some of whom pretty much want to stone gays and have a very negative view of things. I think I posted that on my Facebook page. Don't recall if I put it on the horn, but this is not an ideal situation. But past this, I think we have to figure out who we are, what we want, and realize you don't always get what you want at once. It's going to be a very long slog because we're fighting the tide of 36 years of Reaganism and its influence on the country.
And it's a fair question to ask, how do you reverse that? Because it is, given the nature of our governmental structure, Will, it is almost impossible to undo all that nastiness overnight, or even in one Congress.
No, sometime recently you said that fighting climate change will be a long, hard haul, and that the 22nd Amendment, which limits terms of a president, could be seen as an obstacle, because guess what? If Obama was running as opposed to Hillary, he'd be mopping the floor with Trump.
Trump wouldn't be running.
Trump wouldn't be running because Trump
it
would
probably
realize,
would be. It probably would be John Kasich against him.
Right.
If not, Bishop Willard Romney for a repeat.
Right. But instead, we have to work with a very flawed system. I mean, I have to argue that sometimes you have to make the best of a less than ideal situation. But there are things that we can do. One is organizing locally, supporting good causes, which is something you know a lot about, because heaven knows Appalachia needs as much help and support as it can get, because you still have schools.
But what do you do, Will? And I'm not trying to be an asshole here, okay?
No problem.
What do you do when the people that you most desperately need are prone to saying, no, that's not pure enough? I mean, and since you mentioned what I've been involved in, I'll give you a classic example. We got the AIC Act introduced. It was, and this is something 4 years ago now. We got the AIC Act introduced, and I was talking about it, and I had this green guy come up to me and say, well, like, dude, the whole Congress is corrupt, you know? I mean, why are you even trying that? You know, people power is the only thing that's going to ever end mountaintop removal. And we were also told that because it didn't just say mountaintop removal ends, that in fact, you know, because we structured it as a moratorium on new permits, that was unacceptable because more of it would still be going on. You with me?
Yes.
And you can't explain to them that there's this little pamphlet called the Constitution, and that it has principles in it, things like the Takings Clause, that prevent you from just being able to go and say, you're shut down. There's no way to craft a law that says there shall be no more mountaintop removal at all right now.
Correct.
Because you would be committing an unconstitutional taking of the property of the land companies and the coal companies and their financial interest in it,
by the retroactive action of a law. And this isn't me saying this. This is, we consulted with a lot of people with some pretty Tony freaking law degrees. And so that's how we came up with the structure of the AIC Act. But the purity police said it wasn't good enough.
Now, this is one of the problems, I think, with any movement. There's some people who demand absolute purity. We also see this in some elements of the right. But we have to remember that Rome was not built in a day, to use an cliche, and that we have to work on some things gradually, because that's the only way we can work in this world. Some people you won't be able to convince of that, but then again, there are some people whom you won't be able to convince that we're secretly controlled by a cabal of shape-shifting alien reptiles.
You left out the Jews. I mean, I'm sorry, but...
Oh, please, 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 I'm already here.
Oh, you're all... Wait. No, wait. That was so dry, it almost blew past me. I think you just said, please, I'm already here.
Yes. Yes.
You wounded me, Will. You hurt me.
Yes. Well, I do have a penchant for dry humor, but as I was saying...
Oh, God, I blew dust off that one. That was beautiful.
Yes. Well, I tried, but... As I was saying, we have to realize some people you will never be able to reach on a political matter or any number of other issues. Then you just try to reach those you can. I mean, I very much take the view that you can't win everyone over, so you try to win the people over whom you can. For example, there is probably nothing on this planet yet, a person on this planet who could convince Ann Coulter that she has been fundamentally wrong about her political beliefs and statements. But we don't have to convince Ann Coulter. We have to convince other people. That is something we need to focus on, not the purists. But who can we reach? What can we do? And I know we'll lose some people along the way, but maybe they might come back when they start seeing some results. Perfection is something that I do not expect to see in this world, but we can try to do what good we can. Sometimes we have to be wise enough to admit that we are limited. But that doesn't mean that we refrain from doing anything and just turn on the boob tube. Instead, you do what you can in this world.
And devil take the hindmost, right?
Well, or sometimes you have to have the approach to just say, hey, if you want to talk sometime, we're still here. And then sometimes you can give people a case-by-case basis.
And I mean, these are naughty, you know, the K-N-O-T-T-T-Y kind. These are naughty problems, because on the one hand, I think we would have if we were suddenly able to wave a magic wand and stop burning hydrocarbons tomorrow, humanity in the long term would have a better chance of survival as a species. But the short-term effect of such a thing would be a condemnation to death of a whole lot of people who aren't responsible for the problem in the first place.
Correct, and I mean even, and not just.
And I just don't. World. I don't think I've got enough Maoist in me to support that kind of an idea.
No, sometimes you got to work on more gradual change, and I would argue that. One thing we could do is work on ending subsidies for fossil fuel and other things. Someone called into Tom Hartman's program, an activist, and said that was essentially King Kong coal, oil, nuclear, and gas against the renewable energy industry, and that if you were to end all energy subsidies, a lot of those fossil fuels, as well as nuclear, which relies on government insurance because no insurance company on this planet will insure a nuclear plant, those would end. So we have to realize sometimes you have to steer gradually around an obstacle rather than just cut a sudden path. Yeah, I mean, it takes wisdom, it takes experience, and yet I have faith that we can make a difference because there are people making a difference. The horn itself makes a difference by having a format for conversations. And
well,
if you can,
you know, Will, I hope so, but I get notes like what I got earlier this afternoon, and I wonder. I mean, it just feels like I'm watching everything that calls itself the progressive community just fracturing into a billion tiny pieces.
This is one of the problems. We see ourselves as more about individual causes than a movement. But and I try to
We preach collectivism, but we live individually. Whereas the right wing preaches individuality and moves like army ants in a collective.
Right. Well, I think one thing we have to remember is we need to be all in this together. For example, I'm not a member of some communities, but guess what? The rights of another should be something I care about, because the only way I can be certain to have rights is if I protect the rights of others. And hopefully there'll be some reciprocity. But I think one of the problems with our progressive movement is we have failed to define ourselves as a united movement. Instead, we keep on thinking of our own individual causes, and all are worthy. If we don't stand together, well, it's like what Ben Franklin said, if we do not all hang together, most assuredly we shall all hang separately.
And it's proven to be true time after time after time after time. And yet, so there we go. I mean,
the key thing is to, even with people being angry and upset, to still have hope in the long run and work for it. Yes, there'll be disappointments and setbacks. When that has a habit, I mean, consider this. The women at Seneca Falls who demanded for women the right to vote, very few of them made it to 1920.
I didn't realize that.
I mean, think about it. That was a fight for the equivalent of a human lifetime.
Yeah, that was one of those look over Jordan but don't cross over moments.
Exactly. And sometimes I wonder if we're at that moment, but I have causes of hope. But we have to perhaps begin small, maybe on the local level, and work our way up. Parties can be changed. They've been several times. I mean, the Republicans have gone through a lot of changes between 1964 and 1980. The GOP morphed greatly. The Tea Party is a more recent example. But we need to remember, if we don't do the work, we will have a delayed further. So my advice is, whether you call yourself a Green, a Democrat, or what have you, find something to be involved in and bring your voice to the table. Problem, I mentioned in the chat that several years back, and this is for now closed news site, the Unfiltered News Network, there was a series of podcasts, and in one, a friend interviewed members of Combatants for Peace. They are an Israeli-Palestinian peace group, which have people who have, for example, been jailed Palestinians or Israelis who have served and lost family members due to the violence, and similarly some of the Palestinians have lost family due to violence. There's a lot of tragedy and hurt there. But they have a role as they try to talk to each other and work towards peaceful solutions to the conflict. Keep talking. That's important. And I think that's something the Horn provides. So if you're so moved, support your local progressive talk show and also find something to support in your community and the larger world. In the end, it's up to us. There's an old saying in the Talmud from Rabbi Tarfon. You are not required to complete the word, but neither are you allowed to refrain from it.
Yeah, don't just stand there. Do something.
Do something. Look, yeah. Even if all you can do is raise your voice, speak up, you can make a difference. It's just that.
You know, I never knew.
On giving up.
I never knew that. Hall of Fame Alabama icon football coach Bear Bryant was a student of the Talmud. But, you know, he used to have a sign in the locker room that said, make something happen.
Exactly, because it's all, in the end, it's up to us. If, to quote Hillel, if I'm not for myself, who am I? If I'm only for myself, what am I? If not, now, when? It's up to us. And I realize the path is hard and long, but very few things worthwhile in this world ever come easy or quickly.
And if they do, they weren't worth much in the first place.
Right, or you just somehow got lucky.
There is.
You can't rely on luck to build a better world.
Ain't that the truth? Will, thank you so much. And by the way, good news. Thank you to Robert. Robert took us down to $55 to go on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. So thank you very kindly,
well,
Robert.
Well done. Have a great night, and my best to your daughter.
Thank you very kindly, Will.
My thoughts and prayers.
I do appreciate it. You have a good evening.
Good night.
Bye now. Our buddy Will in Chicago. Now we will run over to the stress line, where I think Tracy's waiting. Hey, Tracy.
Hey. Yeah, thank you. I'm like, I can't fool him that it's, you know, 818, but is it my regular cell phone? I'm actually calling you from the house. So I'm like, I'll try the stress line.
And does it work?
Yeah. I can hear you.
Okay. You know, I wish, Tracy, I mean, you hear me, I hear you, everybody hears us. I wish to God I could figure out why some people can't hear on the stress line and other people can.
Well, I'm calling from a landline, so that might be it, too.
Maybe it is. I mean, because see, on this end, it works Bluetoothly with a cell phone. That's why we got it that way, so we could travel with it. But for some it works, for others not so much. But you know, I'm just glad that it does. How are you?
I'm good. I was in a store and I saw this very interesting beer, blue agave infused blended beer aged in tequila barrel stays.
Is that Oculto stuff?
Yes.
Are you saying you like it? Because I won't get near it.
I was just experimenting, and I like it. It was on sale, so I'm like, what the hell?
Well, tell me after a six-pack.
Well, I'm already finishing one, and I'm about to go get another one.
One beer or one six-pack?
No, one beer.
Yeah, let me know after the six-pack. If you get through three of them and the other three are still there on New Year's, we'll know. But you got to be careful. Hey, Tracy, you got to be careful about all that beer drinking, because did you know that you're not able-bodied? I'm about to do it to you again.
God. Okay.
I live for this. You know that, right?
Why? Pray tell, Bob. Am I not able-bodied enough?
Well, I mean, yeah, we'll just call this segment Hissies with Tracy. This comes via vice presidential nominee and Talibandiana Governor Mike Pence. And back in the 90s, when he was president of the Indiana Policy Review Foundation, Gosh, that just sounds so neutral, doesn't it? I mean, policy review. No wing nuttery. When he was president, the organization published an article called Military Necessity and Homosexuality.
Excuse me, what?
Military Necessity and Homosexuality.
That's what I thought you said. I wasn't clear.
Yeah. Pence gave the go-ahead to publishing this piece of crap. And it's a steamer, too. In the article published in August 1993, one R.D. Ray, who was a senior feller there at the IPRF, wrote, "The homosexuals are not, as a group, able-bodied. They are known to carry extremely high rates of disease brought on because of the nature of their sexual practices and the promiscuity which is a hallmark of their lifestyle. There is no sound military reason for allowing them to serve openly. Homosexuality is a grave threat to not only our nation's health, but also our national security in several ways. Almost all homosexuals engage in sexual practices involving degradation or humiliation rarely practiced by heterosexuals." You get the idea this guy's projecting a little bit and would really like to have a rubber wetsuit?
So, wait, what?
See, no, that's the occulto. It's kicking in now.
No, it's not, because I haven't had enough, because I should have drank a second.
Well, actually, consider yourself warned. I have a note from Brother Deacon Asa, and he's a deacon and therefore cannot lie. And he said the occulto stuff with the skull is garbage. It's sweet, and you end up with a pounding headache. And Brother Deacon Asa
I'm not a purist when it comes to beer. I try anything, and maybe it is kind of sweet. I don't care, because that's the girly girl in me.
And the girly girl kind of liked the skull on the bottle, too, didn't she?
It was actually, maybe I was just kind of pissed off at my mom. I don't know. I think I do stuff subconsciously, even though my mother's nowhere around me right now. There's no way she's going to know that I'm drinking a beer with a skull on it. But it's just like, I think that'll piss off my mom, because, you know, she's the evangelical minister.
Hey, Mom, I'm drinking some devil beer.
I'm drinking the beer with some beer with the name about the occult.
No, I get it.
No, I mean, like I said, I have never been a purist I just started drinking beer maybe about 5-6 years ago. Because the only beer that I was ever introduced to was MGD. Because my aunt actually used to work for Miller's Brewing Company. So we had a shit ton of it. And I really,
I'm going to get in trouble for this. You have no idea, Tracy, how thrilled, happy, and elated I am that you did not say Old English 800.
Honey, I can honestly say, and here's the funny part about black people drinking malt liquor. Never in my life, I've never had OE, Colt 45, Schlitz, Mickey's. I've never, ever.
I've had both Mickey's and Little King's.
I never heard of Little Kings, but see, here's the thing, and you were cringing, like, please don't let her be really black. I know she's black, but don't let her be that black.
I say that because I know that we've got little right wing troll ass lurkers out there.
Oh, I know, and they were waiting for the black chick to say OE, honey, at a 40, and OE. So no, I'm sorry, right wing troller. Sister Gail has never had, has never passed her lips, will never pass.
Ever had a PBR?
Well, actually, I do like, I hate to admit it, but on occasion, actually for my birthday, because, you got to buy a bunch of beer for birthday parties, because, beer. And I knew there were going to be white people here. And for whatever the reason, my white friends love PBR. And I kind of like it, too. So the PBR was the hit of the party.
Okay.
I mean, it's piss water. It is piss water. I understand.
Yeah, but you know what? As compared to your Bud Light or your Miller Light or your Bud or your Miller or, God forbid, Coors.
Coors?
I mean, PBR is some damn fine. You know,
I can't drink it out the can. If I'm going to have a PBR, it has to be out the bottle.
Oh, no. Back in the day, we would road trip from Morgantown, West Virginia, 11 miles up north of the Pennsylvania state line, to a little distributor place, and they had 16-ounce PBRs in the old-school returnable brown glass bottles.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah, that was righteous.
It's those things that, you know, it's the simple things in life. And, by the way, I am so sorry. I've been listening to the show this afternoon, and I'm horrified about what's happening with your girl. I just, right there, solidifies yet another reason why I can't leave California. You said one hospital for three counties?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And in L.A., you could
and it's got it's got 24 beds in it for sick people now, and the rest of it's nursing home.
Uh-huh. See, I'm a huge fan, and then I'm also sorry for the person whoever wrote that email to you about leaving, you know, the Horn family because, you know, Jill Stein. We are a very small community as it is, okay? And I am proud that I am actually in this position to donate when I can. I actually subscribe. So I said I did that at the end of the month because I know you kept saying the end of the month is the worst time of the month for subscriptions. So I went ahead and did a subscription. It's not for much, but at least...
It and it's huge.
So I, you know, there's not a lot of us as is. And for somebody to get butt hurt over the fact that it wasn't like you were being rude or mean or anything.
Oh,
like
but
that.
Apparently I was, because I said at a moment of frustration, I said Jill Stein is an idiot, and I said something about sparkle farting herds of unicorns.
But as you said, we have a level of sheer frustration, Bob. The frustration that you are feeling as a progressive, I have been feeling as a black person all my life. So it's like, and then when we do finally say enough, I can't take this bullshit anymore, then we're the bad guy. And it's like, you can't win for losing. And when you have people that, you know, are like our, you know, what did Carol Baker call him?
Oh, Trumple Thin Skin.
Trumple Thin Skin. Shout out, props to my girl Carol on that one. We got to get over ourselves. You know, like, you know, when Tom Hartman checked old girl on the phone the other day. But you know what? Even with that conversation, like you said, it was a conversation. That's the longest I've ever heard on a syndicated show that anybody allows a caller to talk, you know. But the fact is, he's like, check your wife. And even he got pissy, too. He's like, yeah, I think he even called old girl an idiot. Because it's this frustration. Because it's like at some point we feel like we're beating our heads up against the proverbial wall.
Oh, bless his heart. I got a tweet from our buddy. We've got several Jasons in the Horn Family Community Congregation. I got a tweet from one of our Jasons who told me that, you know, when I referenced that clip from Tom Hartman, that Tom Hartman is a Hillary apologist. And at that point in time, I just went, well, damn, you know, we're all doomed. Because, you know, there was Tom, and like I said before, I got plenty of issues with Tom. He's way too libertarian for my tastes.
But he
spent the last 10 years doing more than anybody else to help people know who Bernie Sanders was.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's a Clinton apologist because he won't follow follow the Green Party off into the weeds.
Right. And like I said, that clip, I don't know if you, I think I did share it on the Horn page, or maybe I just sent it to you, I don't remember. But he's like, he has issues with Hillary.
Who doesn't? I mean, like I said, that NPR thing that I saw or heard yesterday, where, you know, necessarily they sent the reporter down to North Carolina, and her only job there was to find out if black folks in North Carolina were all excited and with her. And what she found out, whether she was talking to older black people or younger black people, was that African Americans in North Carolina aren't excited about her. They're, if they've got any excitement at all, it's about not letting that Mar-a-Lago Mussolini have the nuclear launch codes.
Well, it's like, did you see that clip that I sent about this, that young brother, Ryan, I think his name is Ryan Davis?
Yes.
And he's, and the one, which the one that, first the one that he did about, oh boy, about the, why can't I think of this? The young man about the whole debacle, but then what he said about Hillary Clinton. He's like, who voted for her? He's like, it was awesome. He goes about, okay, so I have not seen one Hillary bumper sticker and all this. He's like, how did Hillary Clinton...
I have seen... I mean, behold the coelacanth, okay? I have seen my first, I kid you not, Hillary Clinton sticker in West Virginia.
Get the fuck out of here.
It was in the Walmart parking lot, and I felt like I needed to just kind of stand there by the car to make sure that nobody came and keyed it or slashed its tires or poured a jug of bleach in the gas tank.
Exactly. Well, this brother, because I'm pretty sure I shared it on the Horn Facebook page, but he's like, you know, he was hilarious. He was spot on about, because even out here, I didn't see that many Hillary Clinton. I saw, and I still see more, this is the funny part, I still see more Bernie Sanders stickers, bumper stickers, than I do Hillary Clinton stickers out here in California. Still. I have not seen that one Joe Biden sticker, bumper sticker, or anything like that.
Well, they can't afford any. Mostly they ride it in the dirt on unwashed cars. Now, see, that's the kind of snarky that gets me. But it's true.
But
I mean,
see,
yes,
okay.
They don't. Okay, so the Green Party doesn't take anything but donations in pennies. Or you know, they take no corporate contributions. I get that. Okay, that's great. But understand, you're going to stay broke.
Because they don't have any
Bernie Sanderses.
It's not like back in the day when you just, you know, it, you know, even in the last 20 years ago or whatever, if you're running for local office, you put up a few, you know, signs, you go speak at the gymnasium, you know, whatever, you shake the babies, kiss the hand, you know, whatever, and all that. And, you had a chance to get elected, even if you didn't have, there was no such thing as, I mean, it's probably always been packed, but not to this level. The little guy has no chance of ever, unless he's backed by big money or what have you, what is the chances of somebody real actually running for office and being elected? Having the money to stand up against, you know, the Kochs. Because like you said, these fools, I love my friends, I say, oh, don't worry. Look at the Republican Party is dying. No. As long as there's money in the world, the Republican Party will never die. It will just reboot. It will rebrand itself. And, you know, I mean... Like they said, if you think that the Koch brothers formed the Tea Party to, you know, fight for your rights, you're a damn idiot. The Tea Party was formed for one reason and one reason only, to keep the scaremongering going in this country when the brown guy got into the White Office.
I mean, the White House. White House.
Yeah. But the opposite of that, Tracy, is the fact that if this NPR report is to be taken at face value, there's zero excitement for her qua her. And I understand it. She's terrible. I mean, and I don't know what it takes to get the hardcores, and frankly, I don't really talk to them much, to understand just how bad a candidate she is. If she was running against anybody but Donald Trump, she would be down 10 points in the polls. As it is, on the national basis, she's only up by 6 or 7, and that's 2 points away from the margin of error. As Kim from New Jersey said earlier, this is going to be a nail-biter.
Look, Bernie Sanders would have mopped the floor with Donald Trump. And like you said, because I'm here scratching my head.
Hold on, though, because if we're going to use those the people who were interviewed in North Carolina as the benchmark, would they be any more excited about Bernie?
Well, the brother that was talking on, he's from North Carolina. And I think had Bernie, here's my thing, you know, about the whole Bernie Sanders debacle and stuff, and how a lot of, you know, like even out here in California, how they were playing games. I've never had an issue about being an independent and just voting, you know, whoever I wanted to vote for the primary, you know. This is the first election that there was an issue that I had to change from independent to Democrat. And I'm like, oh, really? So, you know, there was a lot of shenanigans going on with the voting. And then again, you know, how the media did not really pay attention. You know, he didn't get as much play and press and all that. I really think, and you know what, and here's another thing. I'm really kind of upset with the Black Lives Matter movement.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're not endorsing anybody. I'm like, smooth. Because had they taken the time to talk to Bernie Sanders and really gotten to know him in his platform, there would have been more black people hearing about him.
See, that's I can never say that.
Well, I can't because I'm black. But you could think it.
Well, I mean, we waited an awful long time for anybody to confront Hillary. When we watched time after time as people confronted Bernie.
And
you know what? I get it. When people who despise Hillary say that they are absolutely convinced that this whole thing is just mummery, it's a dumb show, it's a setup, it's rigged, that Trump was finagled or hoodwinked or whatever into running, I can understand how somebody can say that and keep a straight face. And when this is all over, it's never all over, Tracy. But when this is all over, I hope a lot of somebodies, preferably somebody who is inside the for-profit media structure, will say a pox on all our houses for what we did to advance the campaign of that walking pile of human excrement that is Donald Trump.
Exactly. Nobody,
and see, I've never referred to Jill Stein as a walking pile of human excrement, nor would I.
No.
But it's okay for me to do that with Trump, but if I say that I'm not impressed by her brilliance and I think that she comes across like an idiot sometimes, well damn you, Bob.
Okay. Wi-Fi, Bob.
Oh, no, you can't do that. That's not fair. They just want to talk about it. They just want to teach the controversy. That's all. There's controversy there.
Okay.
Even though RF from Wi-Fi is not even remotely the same threat as you know, serious RF.
When you said that, I was driving through the canyons on a very narrow road. And I was thinking, I said, wait, what? They really just say.
Ah, the Wi-Fi got me baby, right? I mean.
I really need people to get a reality check. right? I really need, and like I said, it's, you know how Black Lives Matter's called out, you know, Bernie. Why no one called Hillary out? I mean, they did on one occasion. That one occasion when the sister said, "We will not be brought to heel," and we didn't hear, and no one else did anything else. They don't call him out on his racism. They don't call her out. And now, too little.
Oh, I mean, you want to talk about just pathetic. I got a story here, and we're running out of time, but this needs to be mentioned. So it turns out that when he had an interview in a black church, the whole thing was scripted.
No shit, Sherlock. Like I said,
and then you got the African American minister. Who, Pastor Mark Burns, who's a big Trumpansy.
Oh, we got a Trumpansy?
In the black church, yes. So he tweeted this disgusting, and you can't get around the fact, Tracy, that there is a disgusting degree of just scurrilous filth out there, undeserved, about Hillary Clinton. There's shit she deserves. There's shit she doesn't. So there was this scurrilous cartoon, full color, of, okay, so the Hillary caricature is wearing a black T-shirt, and it says, "No hot sauce, no peace." And she's holding up a sign that has, you know, the symbols on it that mean fuck. You know, fuck the police. And she's got her blonde hair, and she's saying, you know, in like dialect, "I ain't no ways tired of pandering to African Americans." And she's in blackface. And a black pastor doesn't get it that it's not okay.
There was a sister, I don't know, her Auntie Boo or whatever her name. See, this is what I know. When black people have lost their minds, I told you about the right winger that keeps, you know, we're supposedly friends, but I'm a step away from blocking her ass because the only time she says something to me is when it's, you know, I forget what she, you know, when it's kind of debatable, but when I actually have facts, she never posts anything against, you know, she shuts up. But when I post something like, you know, anything about Trump, I'm supporting Trump and all that, but when I call her on it. So anyway, I never go to her page, but, you know, every so often there's a feed, and it says Auntie Boo, and she was talking about, you know, Colin. And this is a black woman. And she's like, you know, "Take your punk, whiny ass. If you don't like the way this country's running, then leave." And this is a black woman. The anthem says this is the home of the free and the brave. How dare you this? And I'm like, you fucking Auntie Tominisa. You noble Negro. I didn't listen to the whole
thing.
Well,
you know, at least, have you gotten around, and we really got to go, but have you gotten around to watching that little darling 24-year-old queen of white privilege, Tommy Lahren?
No, remember, I sent you that link.
Yeah, okay.
Because I said I wasn't going to post it on either one on her page or my page.
Yeah.
And that's why I sent you the link to the
brother
talking.
But the funny thing is, I was talking with Ferg about it today, I said, and Margie was the one who brought it up, and she said, "You know, she starts out talking like she's trying to talk to Colin Kaepernick, but pretty soon you figure out that she's actually screaming at everybody on this earth who's black." And I didn't realize how young she was. 24 years old.
She's only
24 years old.
So she don't know shit.
Now that's not to say that 24-year-olds don't know shit.
She don't know shit, Bob.
But to
I'm saying,
fresh out of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas.
she, you know, again, she has lived, no, she, see, this is the thing, and this is what, when white privilege makes my head spin and hurt.
Oh, no, no, there's enough white privilege there to take care of the country.
And
but I'm just a truth teller.
Right.
It's fabulous. Well, now, see, that's going to be, I'll be called. I got to be so careful because I don't want to be sexist. You know? Ah, shoot, Tracy. We got to get out of here.
I know we got to go. But I recommend, like I said, I sent you the link with the brother, his response to her. You're going to love it.
Cool.
All
right.
You be good.
See ya.
Try to stay calm.
All right. I'm trying. Bye now. It really is time to get out of here. We finish off with $55 to go to finish Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. I hope that will happen quickly, and then we'll go forward with Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow evening. Me, I got to hit the road. Time to go pick up Margie from work. Y'all have a good night. Later, y'all.